Good morning, everybody. Please be seated. Welcome, everybody, to our new digs here. This is case number 68906, Forrest Grin versus State. Mr. Coffey and Ms. Rhodes. Mr. Coffey, you ready to proceed?
I am. Scott Coffey, on behalf of the appellant, Justin Forrest Grin. Chief Justice, Justice of the Nevada Supreme Court, good morning. We are here today because the state relied in getting a conviction of Mr. Forrest Grin on testimonial evidence of a witness that they refused to produce. It is that simple. Before trial, we were notified that Dr. Benelamo, a forensic pathologist, would be a witness, in this case, an expert witness. He did the dissection of the brain. The brain and the spinal column were sent as a unit. He is a very specific type of expert that does work that can't be done in the Clark County Coroner's Office. The brain and spinal column were sent to Lodi, California, to Dr. Amelou's lab, where Dr. Amelou did the dissection. In doing that, he relied solely upon his own expertise. The lab was not certified to do tissue dissection. It was only certified to do review of tissue samples, and he produced a report. At the time he was doing this work, Mr. Forrest Grin had already been arrested. He was a suspect in this case, which I think is important for confrontation clause purposes. He was a suspect, and the coroner's office here, without Dr. Amelou's work, was unable to reach a conclusion in the autopsy report. Dr. Sims waited months on Dr. Amelou to provide this report. When the state decided a few weeks before trial that they did not want to call Dr. Amelou to the stand, they contacted us. And said, will you stipulate to Dr. Amelou's report? And we did some further investigation. We met with Dr. Sims. It's all laid out in our motions pre-trial to compel Dr. Amelou to appear. We met with Dr. Sims, and it became apparent that there were problems with the procedures that were used in Dr. Amelou's lab. That Dr. Amelou had lost some tissue, that there had been a dispute with the coroner's office, that actually following this case, Dr. Amelou had been terminated. His contract with the coroner's office had been terminated. And it's somewhat obvious as to why the state may not want to call Dr. Amelou as a witness, given all this fodder for cross-examination.
Let me ask you this. You just mentioned you filed a motion to compel him to appear.
Yes.
Was that for you to use him on direct examination?
It was for cross-examination. The motion was to exclude the evidence of his report absent his availability for cross-examination. That was
okay,
the subject.
But is there a reason you could have called him on your direct examination?
We could have, but I don't think we're required to under the various case law. The state has the obligation of producing the witnesses against the defendant. And here Dr. Amelou was most certainly a witness.
We're going to use it to impeach the reliability of the slides.
Again, I think under Howard and a variety of other cases, the state has the obligation of calling the witnesses against the defendant. And here, they didn't call the witnesses against the defendant. The only way to establish chain of custody, the only way to establish the slides were cut from the right spot.
You had that information available.
I'm sorry, which information?
You had the information about the suspicions you had about the reliability of the slides and his other various deficiencies.
We did have that information available, and that's what we planned on using for cross-examination. The court agreed that the statements and that the report was testimonial, and they excluded the report from coming into evidence. The problem is the solution that they fashioned was unworkable. The solution was to have Sims simply, after the fact, re-review the slides.
Was Mr. Sims designated as an expert witness?
He was designated as an expert witness. His designation in the notice was more limited than that of Dr. Amelou. He was not designated to testify to the area, for example, of the slides were cut from. One of the things that's critical in this case is the area in the brain from which the slides were cut. There was diffuse axonal injury that was localized to the brainstem, and that was critical for Dr. Sims to come to the conclusion that Mr. Forrest Grin was a liar. And that's essentially the conclusion that he had to come to in doing the autopsy. But everything else could potentially be explained by a short-distance fall as described by Mr. Forrest Grin shortly after the incident.
So what was the piece of information that you had to get out of Sims that came from Amelou?
The location from which the brain slides were cut.
Okay.
And the labeling of the brain slides. There was no way to determine that. If the court looks at the emails that were provided in the pretrial motions and were also provided in the appendix and referenced in the appendix, the location of the brain slides is not readily apparent by looking at the brain slides. When you look at the brain slides, it is simply brain matter. You can't tell whether it's the pons or the frontal lobe or the brain stem by just looking at the slides.
Can you educate me why it mattered where they came from for Dr. Sims' expert opinion?
Absolutely. The reason that it mattered for Dr. Sims is he said that I looked at all these papers and even diffuse external injury can happen from some shorter distance falls, 4 or 5 feet, but there was a well-researched German paper that made the difference for me. This well-researched German paper said that diffuse axonal injury localized to the brain stem was indicative of shaken baby syndrome, as opposed to diffuse axonal injury showing up every place in the brain. There was actually a dispute in the emails between Amelin and Sims as to whether or not this was important, but for Sims it was certainly important for him to reach his conclusion. Diffuse axonal injury localized to the brain stem was the portion that was critical for Dr. Sims, the point that put him over the top, so to speak, where he said, I don't think there's any other choice but to conclude shaken baby syndrome. So it's the localization, and that can't be gotten to without Dr. Amelin, who cut the slides, who labeled the slides, who did those sorts of things, and who, on the first run of the information, by the way, didn't provide this information in the report. When he first ran this through, he just said diffuse axonal injury. If there's any question about this being testimonial, you can look at the emails back and forth where the coroner's office is in contact with Dr. Amelin and says specifically, we need the location of the brain slides because we have preliminary hearing coming up. I don't think there's any question that the location and that information was done specifically for the purpose of litigation.
Mr. Coffey, looking at this, though, the distinction would seem to be whether or not Dr. Sims reviewed information and came up with his own conclusions, opposed to offering the conclusions of the other doctors. Because you're asserting testimony. I understand testimony of our doctor that didn't testify. But as an expert, the expert is allowed certain leeway in reviewing, and then if they make their own interpretation of the material, was that done or not done from your standpoint?
It's not done, and here's why. He did review the slides, but he has to rely on Dr. Amelin's word for this location. That's not part of his review. The only way to get that key piece of information is to rely on the work of Dr. Amelin.
Now, that, to me, is contrary to what I saw. There was an indication that Dr. Amelin's findings didn't alter his original opinion as to the cause and manner of death, and that it was... he concluded it was abuse of head trauma.
But not exactly what happened. Here's exactly what happened. The original autopsy report was not prepared until the report from Dr. Amelin was in Dr. Sims' hands. So the original report relied on Dr. Amelin. The solution fashioned by the court a couple of days before trial was to re-review the slides. Dr. Sims had not reviewed the slides at that point. He had relied entirely upon Dr. Amelin. In re-reviewing the slides, he necessarily depended upon Dr. Amelin for the location from which the slides were cut, for the labeling of the slides, for the fact that the slides even came from this brain. Compounding the problem is that we were cut off on cross-examination of Dr. Sims about the problems with Dr. Amelin's laboratory. After this, Dr. Sims said, flat out, I will not work with Dr. Amelin again. There's a problem. The state said the reason they didn't call Dr. Amelin is they didn't want to turn the trial into a circus. But with all due respect, that is what the confrontation clause requires. If the witnesses are going to turn the proceeding into a circus, then so be it. You either put on the show, or you forego the information. And here the state refused to do either. That's part of the problem. The cross-examination of Dr. Sims about the reliability of Dr. Amelin would have been critical, but again, that was cut off by the court also. Dr. Sims is aware that the lab isn't certified. If you ask Dr. Sims specifically what goes on in that lab, and this is in our pretrial motion, we asked him in conferences beforehand, what goes on in Dr. Amelin's lab, I have no idea because he refuses to talk to me. And that's the situation we were in also, by the way. My investigator, myself, attempted to talk to Dr. Amelin time and time again, before trial. The only time we got access to Dr. Amelin was when we forced the issue by refusing to stipulate to the report. There's no question that Dr. Amelin was a fly in the ointment for the state, and there's no question that they wanted to avoid putting Dr. Amelin on the stand. They wanted to avoid our questions. So what we're left with is letting the state's case depend on the reliability of Dr. Amelin's work without producing Dr. Amelin, and that's a fundamental problem under the Constitution and under the Confrontation Clause.
Mr. Coffey, you had an opportunity to present counter-expert, though, to Dr. Sims, didn't you, at the trial?
We did present a counter-expert, but again, I think we've got a potential burden shift, and I didn't talk about our expert, but our expert concluded that the evidence was potentially consistent with what Forsman described immediately after the circumstance.
Okay, so we have the Sims testimony versus your expert. It goes to the jury. The jury agrees with the state. So how do we handle that?
Our expert was not reviewing the individual slides. That wasn't what our expert was invited for. He was talking about the other injuries, the triad of injuries that is commonly seen in shaken baby cases, cerebral edema, subdural hematoma, retinal hemorrhages. He came to the conclusion that the state's expert also came to, which is those three findings, even in conjunction, are not enough to diagnose shaken baby syndrome. That's why this matters, is the other findings in this case aren't enough to support the conclusion. Without DAI, diffuse sexual injury, localized to the brainstem, Dr. Sims doesn't get to his conclusion. And the state's experts wouldn't have either. I read the harmless error portion of the state's brief. The problem with the harmless error portion is it really underplays the importance of DAI. And the state used DAI throughout the trial, make no mistake. They argued DAI in opening. They argued through the witnesses, every witness that was called, that was competent to testify about it, talked about DAI. And ultimately, in closing, they argued DAI deep within the brain was one of the reasons that we knew Mr. Forsman was lying. So it was used by the state throughout this DAI diagnosis and localization, but without localization, it was just simply DAI and wasn't enough for Dr. Sims to make his ultimate conclusion.
Mr. Coffey, in the cross-examination of Dr. Sims, did the defense get him to acknowledge that the slides were not labeled, that he reviewed and based his opinion on? And did the defense get him to acknowledge that he did not know the exact location from which the slides came?
He said that he depended on Dr. Amelin for that information. And we started to go there before we were cut off on cross-examination. As far as we got was Dr. Sims asking a question back to me, which was, are you saying that Amelin somehow mislabeled the slides or mishandled the slides? That's as far as we got. Again, the other problems inside the lab certainly raised the specter of that, and that's what we should have had available for cross-examination.
If I could, I've got about 2 minutes left.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes.
Ms. Rhodes, do you have the state?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Christina Rhodes. I'm representing the respondent in this matter. I was trial counsel along with Mr. Michael Stoddarger. This court should affirm Mr. Forsbrin's conviction because there was absolutely no violation of the Confrontation Clause. Dr. Sims did exactly what this court said was legally acceptable and permissible under VEGA. And this court said a doctor's testimony regarding his independent opinions based upon his review, and in that case it was a diagram of the gynecological exam and the video of that same exam, testimony about that doctor's independent opinion generated by reviewing the video recording, reviewing that diagram, does not violate the Confrontation Clause because the testifying doctor's judgment, proficiency, and methodology are subject to cross-examination. And in VEGA, this court differentiated independent opinions versus testifying about the content of the exam, which this court said the latter would violate the Confrontation Clause. Here,
but Ms. Rhodes, yes. That doesn't seem to be the issue on appeal. The question is not the validity of the material reviewed in VEGA. The question here is, what was the source of the slides? Were they cut from the proper place? And was that necessary to establish the basis for the state's theory of this death. What is the testimony from Sims on that point? And what are the facts with regard to the slides? Let's hear about that.
Thank you, Your Honor. And you asked that question of the defense, and I would like to address that. The entire claim relies, and the reply brief goes to, it is impossible for Dr. Sims to tell where these slides came from in the body. That's not supported by the record. As Your Honor pointed out, they did not ask, how do you know where these slides came from? How do you know this is from the brainstem? Dr. Sims testified directly, I viewed these slides, they are from the brainstem. I saw diffuse axonal injury in these slides. He talked about the staining procedures. He talked about how he was able to see on those staining procedures the diffuse axonal injury versus the hypoxic injury. And he also testified that he took those slides for his collection because it was so clear what he saw. He was never confronted, even though they had the opportunity to do that. How do you know these slides came from the brainstem? He was qualified as an expert. He has done thousands of cases. He does this for a living. He looks at cells, pathological, where these things came from in the body. And the only supporting documentation that they have for that it's impossible for Dr. Sims to have told where these slides came from are those emails, which that's not what those emails say. And that those emails were sent prior to Dr. Sims ever putting his eyes on the slides himself. Dr. Sims never testified. I relied on Dr. Amal.
It does seem peculiar, though, that they'd be sending emails saying, we need specification about where these slides come from, and then all of a sudden he reviews a group of slides. I guess I'm just a little bit surprised that someone wouldn't say to the doctor during cross, at least, how do you know these slides came from this location? You didn't cut them, if that's a proper term.
Right, and that was never asked. And they did ask, in the language exactly, in two of the questions that the defense asked, you relied on Dr. Amal's work to some extent. Those were the exact questions that were asked. So that was talked about, and that was explored on cross-examination. The state did not cut that cross-examination off. The issue about the cross-examination that the state objected to was when Mr. Coffey was getting into the personal disagreements between Dr. Sims and Dr. Amalu, which it's the state's position that was not relevant, and it was only to distract the jury. And that circus comment only came out after those emails were attempted to get into by the defense. That wasn't the issue. But the testimony directly,
I read Sims' testimony to say that he understood these slides to relate to this area of the brain and that these provided the predictors that he needed to support this theory.
Exactly, and that was testified on multiple occasions. I reviewed this. This was the brainstem. This is what I saw when I reviewed those slides. And he was, despite the opportunity, never asked, how do you know those slides came from the brainstem? He knows histology. He can look at those cells. He's a medical doctor, and he can tell where those cells came from in the body. And this argument that it's impossible for him to have known that is not supported by those emails. He was asking that when he was doing his autopsy report, and there are also emails attached in the appendix about how he needed medical records from her treatment in the hospital before she was released home, her treatment when she came back. So he was getting all of these records, and he wanted to be as specific as possible, and he came to those conclusions, and even more so, prior to him testifying, is when he reviewed those slides, and that's when he testified to his own independent opinions and knowledge about those slides, what he saw in those slides.
But this begs the question as to why Amalo was retained by the coroner's office in the first place. This seems to be some unique specialty. The dissection of these slides from the brainstem and from this area of the brain seems to be unique. Apparently the coroner's office was not in a position to conduct those dissections, is that right?
I don't believe their lab is set up for that. I don't know exactly why they send it out. They still send it out. And Dr. Sims actually puts his hands on all of these things, on the eyes, on the brain. He fixes them in a solution, and then he sends that tissue to Dr. Amalu. Dr. Amalu puts it on the computer, it cuts the slides, Amalu sends the slides back along with that fixed brain, the fixed eyes. And so I don't know exactly why they have Dr. Amalu cut those slides, but I don't think that that detracts from the fact that Sims was able to determine
what he saw. Were any other parts of the body sent to Amalu from which the slides could come? They didn't send, to exaggerate the point, they didn't send another part of the body. These slides only came from the material of the brain that was sent.
Exactly, Your Honor. And they were given the opportunity to ask about that. And the coroner's office got that brain back, got those eyes back, and those slides back, and he was able to review that.
Okay. Why was Dr. Mullen not available to testify at the trial? I realize the state was decided not to call him, but was he out of the country, or was he available to be subpoenaed?
He was available to be subpoenaed by both the state and the defense. After speaking with Dr. Sims, after speaking with Dr. Amalu, after looking at the report, the state initially determined that it was just not necessary. We had 10 doctors come in and testify, all of which were centralized here in Las Vegas. Dr. Amalu was out of state. The expense, the fact that Dr. Sims was able, they still have the slides, the coroner's office still have the slides, and he was able to put his eyes on those slides. He was unnecessary. And then this circus comment only comes out after these emails are asked about on cross-examination. And so the distracting from the jury with the evidence of how this child died and the brain, what the doctor saw from the brain, any personal, professional disagreement between Sims and Amalu, that's a collateral matter. And that's why the state objected to that. And that's only when that circus comment came out. But I think initially, expense, we already had several doctors come in and testify, and Dr. Sims was able to testify.
Was anything that he would testify to exculpatory?
Dr. Amalu?
Mm-hmm.
Not to the state's knowledge at all. And the defense did have that report, and they had the addendum to the report. And the defense, we did facilitate a phone call with the defense and Dr. Amalu.
I've done criminal law for about 47 years, either as a public defender, a private attorney, a judge. And many times in trials, the state has had to put on witnesses that weren't their best witnesses, but they felt it was only fair. And how do you answer that, that it's not very fair that you didn't call Dr. Amalu?
Your Honor, I think Dr. Sims was able to testify about that. He was able to look at the slides. Dr. Amalu produced those slides, and Sims put his eyes on it. I don't know the question about whether or not it's unfair. And defense did get into this disagreement between him and Amalu and was able to say, you're never going to work with him again, and those were all allowed to be asked. So that was all examined during cross. And so I think they had the opportunity to talk about any unfairness.
Well, it sounds like the judge cut him off on some of their cross-examination. That bothers me. It was Judge Villani, right?
It was, Your Honor.
And he cut him off. I mean, he should have let him go. Circus or no circus, this man's freedom was at stake. And you guys did not call that witness. I've had cases where they didn't call. The state put on people who said there were no fingerprints. You know, obviously exculpatory testimony, but they did it anyway to be even-handed in fairness. I think you hit the salami in this case.
And I would submit that there was no exculpatory evidence, Your Honor. Dr. Mueller came to the conclusion that there was diffuse axonal injury in the brain.
You hired a bad expert, and you didn't want him to testify before this jury. I mean, that's the truth.
I mean, respectfully, that's not the state's position. We did not call him because he was unnecessary, and there's no confrontation clause violation there with him, with Dr. Sims testifying about the slides. The report wholly supports diffuse axonal injury. The report wholly supports Dr. Sims's conclusions, his own conclusions and opinions that were contained in his autopsy report, which is what Dr. Sims testified to.
I think it's amazing in a 14-day trial that the only issue is this issue, so it must be a big issue. It sounds like you and Mr. Stoddard tried a very clean case, which is really unusual in these type of situations. So it was a clean case. There seems to be one major issue here. And if Annalou would have been called, there'd be no issues. It'd be a clean case. That'd be one of those briefs where you'd say insufficient evidence. And that's not the issue here. So it's just my belief that I'm sort of disappointed that the state did not call him and give Mr. Coffey and a chance to really cross-examine this expert witness that you personally, that your office retained.
I understand. And it was the coroner's office that sent it out. And just like Justice Perry-Gary said, they had the opportunity to call him too, and the state's not trying to burden shift, but they did have the opportunity.
When Mr. Coffey comes back.
As far as the diffuse axillary injury was important in this case, but I do want to point the court to all of the other evidence that was presented. There were lay witnesses that testified, very important, critical lay witnesses about the defendant's statement. And if you look at the closing argument, that's what the majority of the state's argument and the defense's argument was, the defendant's statements, his initial statements that contradicted themselves. And so that was key. The other daughter that was in the house that day, that was key as well. All the other medical testimony, all the medical doctors testified that this was an abuse-type situation. Dr. Mehta, Dr. Settle, they all testified. And they had Dr. Hyman as well. And Dr. Hyman looked at the diffuse axonal injury, he looked at the hypoxic injury, and he made his own conclusions that there's no way that could come from a fall. So their own expert looked at this information as well and testified about it. And so I think that goes to the fairness of what occurred, Your Honor.
And if we do find error, you feel it's harmless, though, in this
particular case? I do, based on...
expand on that a bit?
Yes, I will expand on that, Your Honor. The defendant's story was that 4 to 6 foot fall, which changed over the course from the 911 call, from what he told the mother of the child. The mother of the child and the other daughter walk into the apartment after they have been gone, and the defendant is in the bedroom. It's a one-bedroom Shelter Island apartment. The defendant is in the bedroom with the door closed with this unbreathing child. When the fire department arrived minutes later, her pupils were fixed and dilated. And so he comes out of that bedroom with the door closed, was the testimony, and then he later says he dropped her in that living room. In that living room, he was bent over picking up the phone. Every medical doctor that the state called, also the defendant testified that this 3-month-old premature baby arched out of his arms and fell onto the floor. And so that story was wholly inconsistent with all of the medical testimony. The medical testimony was that this could not have happened from a fall, and Dr. Sims stated, if you go through his testimony, multiple occasions, constellation of injuries, he did not hang his hat on any one thing, and those questions about him relying on that diffuse axonal injury, that was after repeated questioning by the defense. Could this have happened from a 10-foot fall? Could this diffuse axonal injury have happened from an 8-foot fall? That's when he gets down to those things individually, but he testified repeatedly that it was a constellation of injuries. And so the medical testimony did not support any evidence of a fall. There was no injury to one area of the head. It was global. It was all over the head. There were no knots in the head. There was no skull fracture. Nothing consistent with the defendant's story that this child fell on carpet pad with a rug on top. That's the state's position about the harmless error. There was multiple witnesses that came in, and all of the doctors testified that it was an abusive situation, Your Honor, not just Dr. Sims. And Dr. Sims did not just hang his hat on that diffuse axonal injury.
Thank you, Ms. Woods.
Thank you very much.
Mr.
Thank
Coffey, you. As you approach, why didn't you call the Dr. Angelo Anilo? And if it is error, why isn't it harmless error? It
sounds like a 14-day trial. It sounds like Ms. Rhodes and Mr. Stoddard did a pretty good job in this case.
As far as the story is changing, Candace Barker, who interviewed Mr. Forsman 3 times, said that the story stayed consistent. And Dr. Amelou's opinion was necessary for Dr. Sims to get to his conclusion. Sims says, I was looking to try to figure out if he was lying, because this uneducated man with not even a high school education happens to come up with one scenario that explains every injury except for DAI localized to the brainstem. He describes a tumbling injury to the crown of the head. This is the initial interview, to the crown of the head for the baby turns over. But there is a, by the way, subgalia. There's a bump on the scalp. The claim that Dr. Amelou said that he could tell where the slides were cut from by looking at them is just not supported by the record, despite what the state says today. It's not in there. Proof's in the pudding. Look at the emails back and forth where the Clark County coroner, the head guy, Michael Murphy, had to get involved to get the location known before preliminary hearing. We can't find this. We need the labeling. We need the location. There's no reason for them to go through those extraordinary steps if it is obvious from looking at the slides. It's because it's not obvious from looking at the slides. The labeling and the location come from Dr. Amalu and Dr. Amalu alone. As far as the area in the body, I suppose you could say it wasn't a heel slide or a slide of the left abdomen, but brain slides are brain slides, and the location from which they were cut was critical. In this particular case, in addition to everything else, Dr. Amalu lost evidence. There was evidence that was shaved from the back of an eyeball that Sims said he would have liked to have seen, might have been able to give him some idea about the vital reaction and the timing of the injuries to the eyeball. That was just discarded. Losing evidence raises questions about what happened in Dr. Amalu's uncertified lab, and we were forced to depend on Dr. Amalu for this key finding of diffuse axonal injury localized to the brainstem, which is what made the difference for Sims. That's why it's not harmless error. That was the only evidence of it.
Thank you, Mr. Coffey. Mr. Coffey, Ms. Rhodes, thank you for your spirited argument in this matter and your briefs in this matter. And also, I see that we have a lot of young visitors in our courtroom. If you folks could just stand up, introduce yourself, and say what school you go to. And I'm assuming you're externs with DA's office. If you just one at a time. What about the three young people there?
I'm Camille Garcia, and I go to UNLV.
Sydney Murdoch, I go to Chapman University. Maggie Christiansen, I go to American University.
And Caitlin, how are you, Katie?
Hi, I'm Caitlin Murdoch, I go to Washington University in St. Louis.
Where is that? Oh, in St. Louis? I've heard of that school. I'm a graduate of Washington University Law School. And, young lady?
My name's Christy Allen. I'm a law clerk at the DA's office.
Excellent. And we have one of our persons here, Tom.